You are now listening to the E-Watchmen podcast with your host, Robert King.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Watchmen's Post podcast, episode number 49, I believe. And this program was recorded for the month of May in the year 2014. Well, glory be, this program now appears in iTunes, so that persons who may be doing a search for religious programming on Christianity, or specifically for programming on Jehovah's Witnesses or the Watchtower Society, will likely find these episodes of the Watchman's Post. I've only uploaded the last few episodes, but if a person wants to find the whole archive of them, they can certainly do that. I also began programming on a podcast website for all different sorts of programming, but it's called BeanPod, and I've had Timothy hook the feed up from BeanPod to iTunes. Anyway, I'll post the links here for you all. If you're new to this program, let's say you're listening for the first time from Podbean or whatever, or iTunes. My name is Robert King, and I'm one of Jehovah's Witnesses, although presently in a disfellowshipped state. I actually began an online presence at ewatchman.com back in September of 2002. Just started writing brief articles on various topics of interest to Jehovah's Witnesses. But then in 2004, I expanded that and launched a massive mailing campaign of an 8-page letter to virtually every congregate or every kingdom hall in the United States and Canada and Great Britain and so forth, exposing the Watchtower's hypocritical association with the UN for 10 years. Anyway, that initiated the judicial machinery, and I was disfellowshipped in 2005. And that same year, I came out with the first edition of Jehovah Himself Has Become King. A second edition appeared, I think, in 2012. And as of last autumn, there is an iTunes version as well. So you can go to iTunes Books and download a special version of Jehovah Himself Has Become King. I've made a few additions, and it has more graphics and so forth. So anyway, welcome one and all. The format of this program is basically I answer questions that readers ask. And sometimes I answer them on my website in the mailbag, and other times I answer them online as a podcast. So if you have questions, there's a toll-free number in the United States. I'll post it below here. You can leave your voicemail. I don't respond and call back, but you can leave your voicemail, and you can even specify if you want your voice on the podcast or not. Or you can email me at thewatchmanspost@gmail.com. I have a question here from someone who is studying with Jehovah's Witnesses, and they're at the point of becoming what they call an unbaptized publisher. And that means that they're approved to go out in the ministry, knocking on doors or street work, whatever, approaching the public with the message that is presented by the Watchtower Society. But this interested person who's studying has a dilemma, because he doesn't believe. Well, let me read his comments here. Says, Robert, I seem to be in a sticky situation. As I approach becoming an unbaptized publisher, I cannot help but feel very unsure about answering the publishing questions, knowing that I do not believe that Jesus' presence began in 1914, as well as all the other prophecies tied into that teaching. I feel like I've kept it all bottled up, but I simply cannot deal with it anymore. I feel compelled to let my study teacher, who is an elder, know the truth about what I really believe. Obviously, that isn't the smartest thing to do, considering the fact that I would not be able to be baptized, which is devastating to me. I do not know what to do. My mind has been opened so much to the truth within the Scriptures, mainly thanks to you. I don't regret learning, but it's very hard to live knowing what I now know. All I know is that I cannot, quote, lay low about it anymore and simply keep it hush-hush. Please help me with any advice you can give. Thank you. Well, some would say that this is all my fault, wouldn't they? That I've misled people with this monstrous lie that Jesus did not begin his invisible parousia in 1914. But the truth is that the Watchtower's 1914 doctrine and all that is associated with it is what is described by the Apostle Paul in his letter to the Thessalonians about the man of lawlessness. It is what is called, worded in the newly revised New World Translation, as a deluding influence, which God allows to go to those who otherwise know the truth. And if you read that entire chapter, Paul was talking about those who would proclaim that the presence has begun and that the day of Jehovah is here. And Paul was saying, do not believe it. Even if it sounds like it's inspired, or if it sounds as though it is from us, from the apostles, or if it is a weighty letter as though from us, don't believe it. It will not come unless the apostasy comes first and the man of lawlessness gets revealed. Well, I've written extensively that this applies to Jehovah's Witnesses and the Watchtower Society, that the man of lawlessness is within. And people, a growing number, I have no idea of knowing how many, but a growing number of Jehovah's Witnesses and others like this person, I don't know if it's a male or female, but they are aware of this truth. It is a difficult situation. It would be a difficult situation for any baptized witness, because obviously they would be subject to the tribunal for not accepting the food offered by the faithful slave. And who knows how many have been disfellowshipped for not accepting this 1914 delusion, as I call it. But it sounds to me specifically, I usually advise people, by the way, to lay low. Don't leave yourself open to being, you know, disfellowshipped or prevented from being baptized. And Jesus advised us to be as cautious as serpents, yet innocent as doves. And so that's why this person put quotes around laying low. He says, I cannot lay low about it anymore. So if that's the case, and it sounds like you really have a fire burning in you for the truth. And the irony is that as an unbaptized person, you actually have greater freeness of speech among Jehovah's Witnesses than a baptized person would. So if you go ahead and get baptized, let's say you do lay low and you do not discuss your issues with the elder, and you sort of, you know, slither through cautious as a serpent and they baptize you, then you run the risk of being subjected to a judicial committee if you say anything after you're baptized. So that you are in a somewhat of a dilemma. But I think we're at a point now where this the judgment is about to begin. I mean, the world is sitting on a powder keg. The Anglo-American juggernaut is absolutely determined to launch a world war. It seemed as though they were going to get it on a couple of years ago with Iran, and then last September with Syria. Supposedly the countdown had begun. Obama was going to start bombing Syria, and Russia stepped up and said, no, this isn't going to work. He backed down. A few months later, what happens? They pulled off a coup in Ukraine, set up these Nazis, and now the Nazis are pulled the army out against Ukrainian citizens who happen to be ethnic Russians. And they're determined to set up their missile shields right on Russia's border. Russia knows what's happening. They're both performing nuclear drills. Some may call it saber rattling, but this is how wars start. I mean, we've had two world wars. World War I began just a century ago. And so we're right there again at another massive bloodletting episode. But I feel that this will signal the actual, genuine, authentic parousia of Christ and the judgment. So just being baptized is not necessarily some, you know, protection or guarantee of salvation, because Jehovah's judgment begins with the house of God first. And so there are unfaithful persons who are baptized, who are actually in the leadership positions of this organization. Personally, I am grateful that people like this questioner actually get it. You know, I'm reminded of the words of an old Englishman who had a great impact on the entire English-speaking world, and that is John Wycliffe, back in the 1400s. He was the first person to translate the Holy Scriptures into English. Before that time, it had been pretty much locked up into Latin, and only the scholars knew Latin at that time. But he expressed his desire to make the Scriptures available in English for his fellow Englishmen, and he knew the original languages, and he was determined to do this. But a clergyman tried to dissuade him and how awful it would be to allow the common man to have the Bible. And Brother Wycliffe responded and said, "If God spares my life many more years, I will cause the boy that driveth the plow to know more of the Scriptures than thou doest." And God did spare his life, although he was eventually murdered. He did break down that wall. And although his Bible now is not considered actually very reliable, it was the first. And then, of course, others followed, and the printing press came along, and they could print Bibles faster than the clergy could burn them. And eventually, the powers that be caved, and King James authorized a version of the Bible. And what was that, 1611? But anyway, the point is, I am gratified that young, unbaptized publishers will know more of prophecy than the governing body and the leadership of Jehovah's Witnesses. Now, how about that? Well, I think that is marvelous that Jehovah is doing that. I take no credit other than being the guy that's put this out there. So my advice is to this specific individual, if you can't lay low, it's better not to get baptized, because you don't want to be disfellowshipped, because then your voice would be absolutely muzzled. But as it is now, if we get into this thing and there's going to be widespread confusion among Jehovah's Witnesses, how could there be another world war? The Watchtower said that can't happen. How could it be the presence of Christ? He's been here for 100 years, blah, blah. massive confusion. Many will be stumbled. But my goal has always been to have one person in each congregation, right? 1% of the total number of Jehovah's Witnesses or interested persons even, one in each congregation. And that's just a rough estimate. I know it won't work out that way. But if there's one person in each congregation who can stand in the gap and hold the line and stand up for the truth and explain to people and direct them, perhaps, if my website is still up. So, you know, maybe I'm dreaming, but, you know, do not despise the day of small beginnings, eh? Is that a scripture that rings a bell? All right. Well, thank you for your question. And, you know, it's great that you want to go out and preach to people, and I encourage you to do that. Become an unbaptized publisher if you can. I don't think they probably won't get into 1914 just to be an unbaptized publisher. They would for the 100 questions for baptism, but I think you can go ahead as an unbaptized publisher and sort of sneak in under the radar there, and that'll give you even more freeness of speech and car groups, you know. May Jehovah be with you. Okay, well, you know, ultimately, I just want to add this. The Watchtower Society and the elders are going to have to answer to Christ. Isn't that right? Elders will receive a heavier judgment. They're going to have to answer to Christ for having prohibited persons from being baptized, for instance, because they wouldn't accept this 1914 hoax. So just keep the faith, keep studying, and let Jehovah take care of the big stuff. Well, here's another question from someone apparently on the outside. It says, Robert, even though you're disfellowshipped, you feel Jehovah's Holy Spirit anointed you and has opened up the meaning and understanding of Bible prophecy. What spiritual advice or insight can you give on the following questions? Okay, first I just want to clarify something. If I don't know, it might just be worded funny here, but I wasn't anointed as a disfellowship person. I was anointed back in 1996. And like I had mentioned earlier, it wasn't until 2005 I was disfellowshipped. So it was almost 10 years that I was active in the congregation. Anyway, so he asked, how do you give advice on the following questions? How do all the disfellowshipped, disassociated, and spiritually weak Jehovah's Witnesses survive the Great Tribulation? And I think I'll just go ahead and read all of his questions here. There's three or four. He says, is it even possible to build the kind of faith needed to survive a full frontal attack from Satan and the wild beast in this spiritual condition? I'll just take those two questions. Well, disfellowship, disassociated, or spiritually weak, that's a lot of different categories. If a person has been disfellowshipped, perhaps, for immorality, they would want to get themselves right with God, as the evangelicals would say. Obviously, what did Paul say? That immoral persons will not inherit the kingdom. And he listed off, you know, fornicators, adulterers, drunkards, extortioners. So if a person has, you know, sinned against God, been put out of a congregation, disfellowshipped, as we say, they would have to show fruits of repentance. And why not work to be reinstated? Why stay in a disfellowship condition? It would be, I think, a good discipline. And I think Jehovah would bless someone's efforts at that. Other people are disassociated and not necessarily practicing sin, but they have issues with the Watchtower and no longer want to be associated. So I would ask, where is your faith? I mean, there are a growing number of ex-Jehovah's Witnesses, and they want nothing to do with the organization, and a lot of them don't want anything to do with Jehovah. They They think that the whole thing's a hoax. I mean, but as for a person being spiritually weak, I think, you know, there is strength in being associated with fellow believers. That is an arrangement of God. It is the will of God, right? Do not forsake the gathering of yourselves together. So I don't offer any sort of alternative that way. Although I don't, as for myself, and he mentions it here in his third question, why would Jehovah bless a fellowship person or disassociated person or weak one? How can they do Jehovah's will in this spiritual condition? And he says E. Watchman seems to be in a unique position here. And he said most inactive ones become somewhat worldly, less sensitive to celebrating holidays and birthdays and that sort of thing. Well, that is a problem, isn't it? Because the truth is, if we accept the truth, that God doesn't want his people to be any part of the world. That's his will. And the Watchtower has gone to great lengths to put these lines of demarcation down. And that's an issue. A lot of ex-Jehovah's Witnesses, I mean, they whine and cry that, you know, they were so deprived as children, they didn't get to celebrate Halloween and their birthdays, and they didn't have Christmas presents, and they didn't get to blow out the candles, and, you know, they want to be part of the world, obviously. But we know the truth. We know that Satan is the god of this world, and his wish is to blind us, to draw us away from Jehovah and swallow us up. So again, the Watchtower has a program that helps people stay focused and spiritually strong. If a person can do it on their own, I say, great. You know, I'm trying, slugging it out, but it all comes down to a person's desire to please God. If a person is in, let's say if a person is in this state, I mean, I would ask, do you still witness to people? I mean, we know that's the commission that Christ gave his followers. So if we want to be identified as a follower of Christ, we have to seek his kingdom first, right? And that means speaking about the kingdom. Okay, so if you're disfellowship, disassociated, whatever, you don't go door to door anymore, but do you take opportunities to discuss your faith with others? And there are many opportunities to do so online, forums and comments and so forth. You can email persons, make comments on newspaper articles that allow comments. I mean, if it's in your heart, it will come out, right? Due to the heart's abundance, the mouth speaks. So it's not just a matter of, you know, believing the truth, but it's having faith and going forward. If we have faith in God and do our utmost to be doing his will, then we put ourselves in a position to accept Christ when he comes. Now, this person is asking this question. He said the Watchtower would say that all of these outcasts are just sitting around waiting to die at Armageddon. And that's true. He said, so with your spiritual knowledge and insight, what is our fate and what is the end game for those of Jehovah's Witnesses who enter the tribulation in this spiritual condition? Well, I would rephrase that question. It's true that Jehovah's Witnesses are imagining that the Great Tribulation is going to break out, and that's, you know, that will be it. Whereas I have tried to reset our expectation of what is to occur in the future to the actual presence of Jesus, the beginning of the presence of Christ, which the sign of his presence will be war, right? World war, nation rising against nation, kingdom against kingdom. Food shortages. I mean, the United States is entering a great drought period, and there are no food reserves. And because of fracking, precious groundwater is being wasted. There are towns in Texas now that have run out of water. California, the breadbasket of the United States, is running out of water. And because of fracking, there are no rail cars to take grain to market because they're all full of oil and sludge. This is happening. They're setting it up for a man-made and a natural famine. And pestilence can be right on the heels of that. So when Christ comes, if we have faith and are able to act upon that faith in the future, there is hope for us. And if you read in the book of Joel, right, this locust attack, which Jehovah's Witnesses have no understanding of, it's in that setting that Jehovah says, everyone who calls upon the name of Jehovah will be saved. So keep ourselves unspotted from the world. Keep our faith. If you're not associated with a congregation, at least read the Bible. Read the Watchtower's literature online. It can be upbuilding. Maybe associate with other persons who are in your situation, but who have faith. And keep praying to God. Okay. I've got another question. This is from another person. I don't know, you know, when I set up this website, I thought, I was naive, I suppose. I thought I would get a lot of questions from elders and circuit overseers and such. Not at all, but I'm fine with it. It's just, this person has been away from the organization for some time, and they say, I came across your website while surfing the net, researching sites for ex-witnesses. I was born in the truth and baptized at age 12. I think that's a big mistake, but that's another matter. And I left when I was 16. That was a quick turnaround. I personally have had some negative experiences with the witnesses and the organization. But after 20 years away, I've just started studying again and have been to a few meetings. However, there are a few things that I've heard which really trouble me, which is why I have been doing my own research into these matters to see if I can truly accept the Bible doctrines and practices as they seem now. I think that you may be absolutely correct about the fall of the organization as it currently stands. I know this is kind of speculative. This kind of speculation is not advised and frowned upon. But is this not how C.T. Russell himself founded the truth in the first place? Yeah, good point. They go on, I have felt for some time that understanding of some things have been gradually twisted and questions fobbed off, and perhaps it is time for the society to reiterate some of these beliefs by examining the Bible again and be clearer on the actual faith in Jehovah's will and how he wants us to practice instead of deciding to develop a more cold, unchristian attitude to all humans, witnesses or not. I'd be interested in your thoughts on this and what you actually believe faith-wise currently. Well, what I actually believe is basically that Jehovah's Witnesses teach the truth and in all matters except issues related to prophecy. And that's the deluding influence that Jehovah allowed, which has to do with this artfully contrived false story that Christ has been invisibly present since 1914. Actually, originally they said he was present in 1874, and they didn't ditch that until sometime in like 1940. Anyway, I think there's very little that actually needs revision as far as the core doctrines of Jehovah's Witnesses, but there are obviously unchristian attitudes, and there is tyranny to believe and to conform, and there are things that are twisted and fobbed off. But again, most of that is related to prophecy. So, you know, as far as doing research on websites, there are a lot of people. Some of them are ex-Jehovah's Witnesses or persons that have studied the teachings of Jehovah's Witnesses, and they come up with all kinds of issues and contradictory things and conspiracy whacking stuff. I don't think any of them know anything about the truth. So very little can be gained. Now, the person asked here, or stated, that they thought it was time for the Watchtower to re-examine the Bible. You know, get a fresh start, sort of like C.T. Russell, who founded it. And I can tell you now that that is not going to happen. It's not going to happen. And for one thing, I've been writing the Watchtower letters going back to 1997. I naively thought that they would be responsive way back then. And though I did have some exchange with a few persons at Bethel, it just doesn't soak in because they are in a blinded state. And the only remedy for their blindness is, well, I'd like for everyone, if the next time you open the Bible or read it online, read the 28th chapter of Isaiah. Isaiah is one of my favorite prophetic books, and it speaks primarily to the judgment that will be unveiled at the return of Christ. For example, in the 28th chapter of Isaiah, Jehovah speaks to the spiritual drunkards of Ephraim and how they're going to be hurled down and their place is going to be flooded out. And as a result, Jehovah will be glorified in that day. If you go down to verse 16, Jehovah speaks, saying, "Here I am, laying as a foundation in Zion, a tested stone, the precious cornerstone of a sure foundation. No one exercising faith will panic." So this is referring to the return of Christ, the establishment of the kingdom, what the Watchtower says supposedly happened in 1914. But if you read the context there, that's when Jehovah comes and judges his people at that time when the Zion is set up. And as for the men in verse 15 who say, "We have made a covenant with death, and with the grave we have made an agreement. When the raging flash flood passes through, it will not reach us, for we have made a lie our refuge, and we have hidden ourselves in falsehood." This is exactly what this deluding influence is. They have made an agreement with death. The faithful slave has passed the test. He's been appointed. Recently, they say that's not true, but... It's interesting, though. Jehovah refers to this flash flood wiping them out, but people with faith will not panic. But going down to verse 19, he says, "As often as it passes through this flood," he says, "it will sweep you away, for it will pass through morning after morning, during the day and during the night." And this next verse, "Only terror will make them understand what was heard." Only terror will make them understand. That's why there is no reforming the Watchtower. And, you know, I feel sorry for some people who ex-Jehovah's Witnesses or maybe under the radar. People who are still associating but have their little websites, they want to reform the Watchtower. You're wasting your time. It's not going to happen. Only terror will make them listen to Jehovah. And the terror that Jehovah is going to unleash is the terror brought by the Eighth King, World War, and the tyranny of the tyrant of the nations. Then they'll listen to Jehovah. And if you think this isn't talking about the congregation of Christ, of course the Watchtower says, "Oh yeah, that's Christendom, they're going to get it." Eh? But verse 11, Jehovah says that He told them, "This is the resting place. Let the weary one rest. This is the place of refreshment." But they refused to listen. So Jehovah is speaking to those who are the leaders of his congregation. He provided an organization, a congregation, which he intended to be a spiritual resting place, a place of refreshment. But it's not been, because those leaders, to them, Jehovah's word is command after command, command after command, line by line, line by line, a little here, a little there. It's like a nursery rhyme. The Watchtower even pointed that out. And that's the way the congregations are run. So many hours, you know, we have to do this, we have to do that. And a lot of the friends now are just really, really weary of the load that they've been carrying. And so then Jehovah speaks to them. "Hear the word of Jehovah, you boasters, you rulers of this people in Jerusalem." So he's talking about those who are over his people, who are boasting about being Jehovah's clean organization, being in spiritual paradise, and they've refused to listen to Jehovah's judgments. And I've demonstrated that they have refused. So Jehovah is going to speak to them in terror soon. And so I think that's going to do it for this 49th episode of the Watchman's Post. Thank you for your questions. And until we speak again, may Jehovah bless your search.